Session number 12241, Mr. William Laverick, Reel 5.
Mr. Laverick, Reel 5. We're talking about your early activities with the Communist Party in Watford.
Yes.
We've talked about the meetings. You mentioned the marches. You used to go on marches, but you never organised them. Is this even in the early days?
In the early days. The greatest march we ever had was the trade union, organised through the trade unions and the Labour Party. And that was in Hyde Park when the civil service were having the argument with the government about their wages and whatnot, and they were very much in.
And when was that?
It would be about 31, wasn't it, when they had the trouble with the... I'll never forget it because it was the biggest demonstration I'd ever seen of militants. And it wasn't only militants from the Communist Party. They were there from all over London. Labour there from all over London. Civil servants there from all over London. It was a terrific meeting. And it was the first time I realised that the police ideas were changing. That instead of having a low profile at various meetings, they were suddenly putting a high profile. And I always remember it because...
How did it show itself, this change in attitude?
It changed by the numbers of police that suddenly came onto the... my attitude or their attitude?
Their attitude. Well, I mean, their high profile. I mean,
the high profile with the very large numbers that used to come and circulate round the various speakers in the corner and whatnot, or when you were having a demonstration. Now, this one, we actually realised that there was going to be trouble by the amount of horse police that they had at Marble Arch. And we knew we were going to march to Trafalgar Square from Hyde Park. And we knew there was going to be trouble, so they organised for trouble. This was the first organised trouble march I'd ever been on. If the police had have kept a low profile, there would have been no trouble whatsoever. But you see, what happened was, this march, and there was over 100,000 on this march, well over 100,000, this was the biggest march, it was the biggest demonstration that had been seen at Hyde Park. And when we went out and got on the march, they changed the route of the march without informing the organisers. And they tried, the police, the mounted police and such like, tried to turn them off, the areas, Oxford Street and such like that, that they wanted to march down. And I'll never forget it because it was the first time I was really scared. First time in my life I think I was really scared. Because we suddenly had this immense police pressure from all sides, police coming from all sides, and trying to get, and the marchers at the front, the militants, they knew, knew what was going to happen, and they'd come prepared. So first, I knew nothing about it, but it was the first time I'd seen a demonstration prepared for action.
Now, you hadn't played any part in organising that. You were just there as a punter.
Just there as a...
marcher.
Well, as a communist. I went down the Communist Party from Watford. But this had been organised in the city. They had...
So what did they do? They organised...
They had motorcyclists revving up their motorbikes round in front of horses and whatnot. They had people with ball bearings in their pockets knelt down as the horsemen charged, throw the ball bearings up the road to bring the horses down. And as they were being chased, they were just jumping through shop windows, through the shop, and out at the other end.
Through the glass?
Through the glass. And it's the first time I'd ever seen people so scared of action that they would jump through a glass window. I could never have done it. I could never have jumped. These people, they knew what they were for if they'd caught, because it was the ones that were causing that were really there, that it was the ones that were attacking the police that were escaping.
So it wasn't so much scared as desperate to get away.
They were desperate to get away. They knew what would happen to them if they were caught. And this was the first time I realised that police, as well as assisting the public, could actually demonstrate against the public when it came to assisting the establishment.
That was your first...
First real demonstration where I saw police activity like that.
You hadn't had that in either the 21 or 26 miners strike?
I'd seen what they call it, police in numbers at the collieries. But all they would do was form a wall. But they would never set about the miners. They would never set about them with their trunks and things, the way they did in this at this demonstration. It was the first time I saw truncheons out and going for.
And what happened to you and your Watford chums?
We continued in the crowd, and the time the melee was taking place, we just continued on. And this big battle with the militants was taking place behind us then, you see. But the march went on, and we finished up in Trafalgar Square. But there'd been a terrific amount of damage and whatnot done on the parts of the road had been torn up and pelted at the police and whatnot. And this was the civil servants and whatnot. It wasn't just the communists. It was people who you thought, you know, would be a quiet type of demonstration. And it changed my attitude.
So that was another thing that you did. You went on demonstrations.
Yes. You know.
How was the actual Watford Communist Party organised at the time? I mean, what was its infrastructure, as the modern word is? How, you know...
In cells. You organised in cells.
And what was a cell then?
Well, the area you lived in. The area you lived in.
So you were the Watford cell, were you?
Would it
be broken down?
It was broken down. I was lodging on the on a council estate at the north of Watford, and we had our own cell on that estate.
Geographically.
If they wanted you for anything, they knew where to find you.
And how many would there be in a cell?
There would only be about a dozen. There would be about a dozen in a cell.
And how was the cell organised? I mean, or were you just... I mean, was there a command structure or a political...
Well,
like the Labour Party has...
It was through the cells that you got to know it was taking part in other regions. You see? And the peculiar thing was that they must have had infiltrators into police, they must have had infiltrators into the National Front. Because from then on, from joining the Communist Party and getting into cells then, I knew exactly when National Front demonstrations were going to take place. Because the word was passed immediately round from cell to cell to cell to cell. And they would say, right, we'll arrange to meet the National Front are meeting in such and such a place, we'll arrange to meet in such and such a place.
What was the organisation within the cell? I mean, were you just 12 individuals?
Individuals. Always individuals.
You didn't have a chair of the
cell?
No.
You didn't have any leaders. You were just a cell.
What about you had the Watford Party? Were the cells joined together in any way?
Oh, yes. You had you could send to certain persons that you knew were secretary. You had a secretary and such like, you see. And you had a publicity officer and whatnot. And you could send any message to them that you wanted. You knew where to contact them. You always knew where to contact them.
How were they elected? Or weren't they?
They were self-elected, I would say. Self-elected. So we never had any meetings to elect them.
It wasn't that much... It wasn't a democratic organisation.
No.
In that sense.
No. It was not a democratic organisation in that sense at all. It was a sort of down to the ground, the roots organisation. You just met. You had no chairman. If you had a big meeting, the chairman was appointed from the floor. Any of you would be called on to do a chairmanship. You didn't organise a meeting the way they organise the meetings today. You organised from below. Everything was done from below. And it worked.
Except for the secretary at the middle.
That's right. But we had the daily worker in those days, you see. And they had their offices. And, of course, your daily worker kept you informed with what was happening throughout the communist world then. But you didn't have an organisation like your Labour Party. It didn't have an organisation like that at all.
Did the Watford Party fight elections?
The Fourth Council elections. They never got anywhere but the Fourth Council elections.
Did you fight a full election, you know, canvassing, knocking up, all the paraphernalia?
Not for a communist candidate, I didn't. I have for Labour candidates.
What would you do for the communist candidate? Would they not canvass then?
I was never in an area where they put up a candidate for an election.
So the Watford Party would put up candidates, but not
for
while
council.
You were there. It didn't happen while you
while
were there.
While I was there, no.
This is every 4 years or so, isn't it?
That's right. There was never a communist candidate for Parliament put up by the Watford Party.
What about opposing Mosley's black shirts? You reckon when did you first become aware of fascism?
When I saw the demonstrations down in London at that time, the fascists were, they weren't organised, they were later. Mosley wasn't the head then, he wasn't at the head of affairs there. I believe it was. Yes, Mosley was the head of affairs there. Of course he was. He was the head man. And I saw the organisation down there, but I got more involved with the Anti-Fascist League when I came back here.
What did you... were you aware of what fascism was?
Yes.
How did you know? It was an international movement.
That's right.
Were you aware it was international? Did you know exactly what it was, theoretically?
Well, we knew what it was because, there was a terrific amount of propaganda and whatnot at that time. You see, it was organised. And their propaganda, they weren't afraid to put it across. And they had the media behind them for putting it across. It was terrific, the amount of media time they got to the fascists at that time, you see. And then shortly after, of course, we got Germany, didn't we? We got the uprising, we got Hitler came into power.
In 33?
In 33. But you see, they were organising across here. Before Hitler came into power, the Communist Party was turning very strong. Fascist Party were turned very strong in this country. They were organised in every city in this country in 31.
And were you aware straight away that these were the enemy?
Yes.
That the Socialist Part, the National Socialist,
National
was rubbish.
Socialist, they were, that's right.
The Socialist Part was non-existent.
That's right. We knew straight away. But we knew because of the various meetings that we went to and whatnot. You see, we were in an area where socialism was really recognised as a movement. And it's a peculiar thing, because when I tell people that I learnt more in St Albans about socialism and fascism than anywhere else in the country, I just don't understand it. You see, it seemed to be the centre of socialist movement.
And do you mean St Albans or Watford?
St Albans.
Did you move to St Albans?
No, but we used to go to St Albans quite a lot.
From Watford?
From Watford.
It's not far.
It's not far, no. No, it's almost... We used to go to meet the members up there and whatnot. Various meetings. But you see, St Albans is the most advanced city, I think, in Europe, as far as politics goes.
Then.
It was. And you know, it's a peculiar thing, but it's lasted in St Albans. You see, the last miners' strike... Children were taken to St Albans for holidays. Miners' children given holidays at St Albans. Money was collected at St Albans.
Do you know what caused this political thing? Because it's not a Labour seat or anything, is it? You know, I mean, it's not...
Well, it was... You see, it was Judge Bernard Shaw lived in the area. He lived there. And he had this peculiar lot of people around him. He had these... writers and actors and all these people in the professions that had a socialist mind. They were socialist minded. He had them around him, you see. And also, we had the foundations of the pro-Soviet movement in St Albans.
I'll come back to that. So let's just look at what was your first meet. Did you attend a fascist meeting while you were in London? Did you actually go and see what they were up to?
No, but I saw I saw plenty of demonstrations the time I was down there. They had their marches.
Their marches?
Their marches.
And you'd turn up at them?
We would turn up at their
marches. To oppose?
To oppose, yes.
What Can you remember one of them or any of them? Because it's before the big cable street.
It was before the big cable street. I was up here when the big cable street.
What about the smaller ones? What do you remember about earlier ones? What do you remember about how was it organised? What were the fascists up to?
Well, what happened was, you see, I said before, they must have had someone from the Communist Party infiltrated into the National Front. Because we used to get to know where they were going to hold their meetings.
Now, did you call them the National Front then? Because that's the modern
name.
No,
we didn't call
them. What did you call them then?
We called them fascists.
Oh,
we called ourselves anti-fascists.
And they were just known as the fascists. Not the black shirts.
Black shirts, yes. When they got, but you see, they didn't put the uniforms on straight away till Mosley took them over. He was the man that brought them into uniform. Mosley brought them into uniform. The black shirt and the black trousers. He was the man that done that. He organised the fascist.
So in these early marches, would they be in any sort of uniform at all?
Or they weren't. No, not in the early ones.
Any insignia or...?
They had an insignia on their arm. They had an armband. They used to have an armband.
Which was...?
What they call it, Nazi sign.
That early?
That early.
Even in 31, 32?
Even 31, 32.
As adopted by the...
As adopted
in
by...
In Nazi Germany.
Yes, yes. They had that on their arms. And... we used to get to know where they were going to hold their meetings, and we formed an anti-fascist league.
And in Watford?
Yes, oh yes. The communists themselves were anti-fascists, you see. And they were the anti-fascist league. That was the foundation of the anti-fascist league. And what they used to do was you sent word round all units. There was going to be a meeting at such and such. There were meetings in those days. There weren't marches. Meeting at such and such a hall, we would go down and disrupt it.
Now, let me just ask the thing. For instance, was this a sort of cover organisation for the CP? Had it been banned by then? Or why didn't they just... Why call yourself the Anti-Fascist League? Why not just be the Communist Party? Was there a reason for putting up a front organisation?
No, just that they... I think the real reason was that they were coming out as fascists, so we thought, right, anti-fascists.
So, and would you get support from the other parts of the trade union movement or the Labour movement?
We got support from not only the Labour movement, you got support from Liberals and everything.
So it was to unify the opposition?
It unified the lot, the anti-fascist movement.
Like the anti-Nazi League?
It was everyone, the anti-fascist movement was everyone. And anyone could join it. It wasn't only Labour and Communism.
Who do you think provided the leadership for it?
For the anti-fascist movement? Well, it must have been somebody like George Bernard Shaw and these people, because they were the people that were preaching against it.
So it was quite, it wasn't just, the CP was a part of it and a considerable part of it, but it wasn't a front organisation.
It wasn't a front organisation. It was also, the anti-fascist movement was completely outside of there.
It was a genuine multi-party organisation.
But it must have been moneyed. There must have been big money behind it. They used to get space on media and whatnot, the anti-fascist organisations did.
Even early on. So you'd get to hear there was a meeting your infiltrators,
yes,
or whoever it was. And then what would happen then?
Well, we would organise outside where the meeting was going to be. And we'd take all our placards and things down.
How many of you?
Shout slogans. As many as 100 at a small meeting.
And how many would there be of the fascists in the meeting, perhaps?
Well, it depended. If they were going to have a big meeting, we had a big anti-fascist turnout. You see, you could notify the various areas.
Would you look to have more than they had, or just a parity, or weren't you bothered?
We weren't bothered.
So even if they had 100 and you only had 10, you'd still...
You'd still go and oppose them. But we always had more than that. We always had more than 10.
That could lead to a bit of street fighting.
It did. It always led to a bit of street fighting. There was street fighting in Watford.
That's what I mean, Watford.
Yes, there was street fighting in Watford when I was there.
Between you and the fascists?
Yes.
So they actually had fascist meetings in Watford?
They had fascists in Watford.
And you'd turn up?
We'd turn up.
Who'd provoke the fighting? Would you just attack them, or was it provoked, or what had happened?
Well, I suppose both sides had the toughs, and it was organised. It started and you joined in, this was it. It started and you joined in. It wasn't a question of who provoked it.
How serious was it?
You were provoked by the very fact that you saw them on the street. It was provocation. Seeing them on the street was provocation. So therefore, you walked down on the same side of the street as they were, and you didn't make way for them. And of course, when you met, you tried to walk through them, they tried to walk through you. happened.
And how serious was the violence?
Not serious, just the usual punch-ups.
It wouldn't go further than fists?
That's right. No, wasn't just the usual punch-ups.
Now, were there many... You were a boxer.
Yes.
You'd be fairly useful for the CP.
Oh, well, as I say, I could what they call it.
The fascists, would they have similar types to yourself on...
Oh, they had worse types than what we were. They took the lowest, the dregs, what we term skinheads these days, were the people that they went down to. They were the people they organised. And we knew for a fact that when we went down to meet these people, there was bound to be trouble. There was bound to be, you couldn't avoid it. You couldn't avoid the trouble. But we were fortunate there, you see. I'm pretty certain that the police were also against these people. Because wherever there was a fascist meeting, you always found a pretty good assembly of police in the area. And of course, when we went down, the police were there. So when you started your trouble, the police immediately called in it was stopped, it was broke up. And then we got the idea, right, we've got to stop them from meeting. And we've got to make...
Is this even in the early days in Watford or
in
Newcastle?
In the early days in Watford. We had this is where I got the idea when I came back to Newcastle, how we done it here.
So what was the new idea?
The idea was this, that whoever it was that was infiltrated into there, we didn't know who it was, but somebody was infiltrated into the unit, into the fascist unit. Whoever it was had to let us know what hall the meeting was going to be in. Now, as soon as we got to know the hall the meeting was going to be held at, or the pub, they used to organise at pubs as well, in pub, upstairs rooms in pubs. As soon as we got to know where it was, we immediately contacted the owners and told them they were fascist, because they never came in as a fascist organisation at the start. It was only when His Lordship came in that they really decided to come into the open. Those days, they'd book a hall as anything, the same as they do these days. And as soon as we used to find out where they were, we used to contact the hall owners, the owners of the hall, and we used to tell them straight that a fascist organisation was coming in, and it would pay them to cancel the booking, because we would also be there, and there would sure be trouble, this place would be smashed up, and they didn't want this, you see. And of course, they used to cancel their bookings.
Did you threaten them as well, or was it just on that level of there's going to be trouble?
We didn't threaten. We told them that there was bound to be trouble. You see, it stands to reason that if they were going to hold a meeting in a pub room, the landlord wasn't going to have his place broke up. But as soon as you told them yes, your people were coming along as well as the fascists. You were coming along to say that they didn't get that meeting. They immediately cancelled, you see. So we stopped them in this way as well.
Was there any effort made to target individual fascists in Watford? I mean, you must have got to know some of the leaders, or did you get to know who the leaders of the fascist movement were in Watford, St Albans, in Bedfordshire?
No, you never... Well, you knew them, but you ignored them, because, as I say, the people that were at the top never showed their faces, did they? Mosley was the only man that had the courage to come out and lead. He was the only one that...
But what about locals? Say, if there'd been someone on your council estate, would there have been action taken against the individual?
No, not against the individual. It was the movement you were against.
So as long as they weren't marching, you left them be?
That's right. As long as they didn't get together and put armbands and things on, we were satisfied.
And what about them? Did they do the same to you? As long as you weren't on the street with your CP...
They want to call it. They didn't come and interfere with you at all.
So that was... Didn't. Both sides had a sort of...
You had a working relationship sort of style. you didn't interfere. We, until you assembled, there was no interference. We knew certain fascists on the street, individuals. You just didn't cooperate with them. You didn't meet them.
So you treated them like scabs. You ignored them.
That's right, you ignored them. They ignored you.
But you didn't go around to the house and have a quiet?
Oh, no. No, you never... It was only when they assembled, when they showed up in force, we showed up in force, when they assembled. And as I say, communists must have been very well organised, because they always knew when the meetings were taking place. Same as they were well organised, they knew when our meetings were taking place.
Would they turn up outside yours?
They didn't. This was a peculiar thing. They didn't. They didn't turn up. They didn't turn up at all. At any of the meetings that we had, we didn't have any.
Now, did you only turn out at the time at fascist meetings in Bedfordshire, or would you go into central London when there was a meeting?
So anywhere that they asked for assistance, we would send people down. Anyone that could get would go down. Anyone that, as soon as they got word to you that there was going to be a fascist meeting and they hoped the anti-fascists would turn out, you would immediately call a meeting in your area, tell them such and such an area, there was going to be a fascist meeting, would we go down and support them? Yes.
What do you think, I mean, you were on the other side, it's sometimes difficult to look at the other side, but what do you think made people fascists? What was the attraction? Because to us it seems daft.
Yes.
You know, it seems insane that people should believe that set of beliefs. But what did you have any thoughts then as to what caused people to march with fascism?
It was the thing, I'd never studied the National Socialist movement, and it wasn't until Hitler came along that I took any interest in it. And
you just opposed it before Hitler?
Just opposed it before Hitler. Opposed fascism because it was the opposite of socialism. This is what we opposed.
But you didn't think about why those people were interested in it?
No. No, this wasn't... It didn't really concern us until... As I said, we weren't really concerned about that. There were just another political party as far as we were concerned until Hitler came into power.
In 33. But between 31 and 33, you still kept them off the streets?
We still kept them off the streets.
That's right.
Because they were yes. Yes, we still kept them off the streets. We assembled every time they assembled. There wasn't always friction.
Before 33. Now, you said one of the things you've said, that some of them were almost like the trash of society.
They were.
But why do you think they were so attracted to it?
Because they were a party that knew they were going to be opposed, and they were going to have somebody in the party that could use themselves. This is where it was.
But they wouldn't be paying these people, would they? Or would they?
I shouldn't think so. I don't think they would have the means to pay them.
So what would attract those people to be... You know, to do it.
Well, the you see, there were rejects from society that they were attracting. No, we didn't seem to have any proposals put forward that these people wanted. They wanted support. We weren't there to give support. These people were there to support them. There were the rejects of society that they encouraged to come into the movement. There was Xboxes and down and outs. You see, they hit on the people that were actually on the bottom, real down and outs.
But surely your movement should have been offering something for them as well. I mean, communism was the idea, was to
well,
help the people.
All we could put forward was the ideas, weren't it? We had nothing to give them. We could only put forward ideas. You see, we'd never had a socialist government. We've never had a socialist government. We were advocating Russia, which has turned out to be entirely opposite to what we advocated. You see, this is the peculiar friends of the Soviet Union. This is what we were.
Well, that's another thing I wanted to ask. What about this friends of the Soviet Union?
Well, you see, the friends of the Soviet Union, this is where we met George Bernard Shaw and these people, because we were getting invitations to their meetings. The first meeting that I chaired was a friend, when George Bernard Shaw was there, was a friend of the Soviet Union meeting. And that was at St Albans.
Now, you that's see? The one we talked... What attracted you to the Soviet Union? I mean, did you see it as being communism in action?
Well, we hoped it was. As I say, we didn't see it as that, because we were too poor to travel there then. The place wasn't open for people to visit. I've been there. I've been to both Moscow and Leningrad. And
but not in the early
not in the early days. But I was disappointed when I went there in the late days. I was still disappointed. I was very pleased at the friendliness of the people, but I was disappointed at how poor certain areas were. You know,